Since this week we had Veterans Day, I ask everyone but our veterans to be seated, please. Veterans, remain standing. And won't you show them your appreciation, please? I would give you an order to be seated, but it's been a long time ago for some of you, so we'll just say, y'all be seated, please. I enjoy watching the talent search, the audition for America's Got Talent. Seems like it's the auditions that I get excited about, for it seems like somewhere along the way in the process of the program that I lose interest. But I love to watch those who come on with all different looks and styles, and some who don't look like they can sing or they can have a talent, and bazinga, there they go, and things are happening, and they run out of the building, and they have this ticket, and they're waving it, and they're on their way to Las Vegas or Hollywood or wherever it is they go for their performance to see if they can move on. I do remember one morning enjoying my traditional cup of coffee and watching some of the morning news when they talked about a similar program in Britain called Britain's Got Talent. And here was this very plain Jane, as we say sometimes here, lady who was not well polished, and they said, you are going to be shot. I remember some of the interview as they were talking to her, and you could tell that those who were interviewing her were not too captivated, for she was a rather older lady than most who participate in the talent search. And I remember vividly when they gave her the go-ahead. Okay, let's hear what you've got. And wow. The rest was history. Now a talent that is no longer hidden from the world. The voice almost of an angel. Susan Boyle came out of the shadows. As I read this section of scripture, I think about Christians who have hidden talent. The nomination committee has been working diligently, and tomorrow is that day that many ministers fear and work so hard for during the year, called Charge Conference. I do not know if I have worked with a nomination committee in my entire ministry that has spent so many productive hours in conversations with each other, on the phone with many of you. And this process, as I've already alluded to, is not a strange process for those of us who are called Methodists. Some changes are occurring that I will not go into this morning in the pulpit, but the changes that I do have with conviction that are in the right direction for our church. I will say that as a minister, as I was sharing with some of my staff a few weeks ago, and I was talking about my level of expectation as a minister for those who are laboring within the church and within certain areas. And I will tell you this morning that I only want you working in areas that you find fulfilling. I want you to work in areas that you find enjoyable. I do not want you working in areas that you find intimidating. I want you to work in those areas that does not sap your strength, but rather is energy producing. An area that is for you a joy. A joy that excites you, a joy that causes you to be enthused about what you're doing, and to hardly acknowledge that not all of us have the same talents. We have those within our congregation who have taught, and some of you have taught in Sunday school classes and different groups and Wednesday night Bible studies and other areas for a long time. To reach out my hand and ask some of you to teach would cause you to go into a shell. Your knees would turn wobbly. Your mouth would get dry. It's not your area. It's not your talent. To ask some of you to be here in the mornings and to greet those who come in the door and to welcome new visitors and to make sure that everyone knows how much we enjoy you being a part of the family here at Main Street might force some of you to reconsider where you're going to attend church. Or to ask others of you to cook a meal would be an immediate turnoff, possibly making some of us sick. It could possibly, again, be the impetus that pushes you and your family out of the door of Main Street. In today's reading, the servants have been given money, and many of you know this story so well, and you've heard it this morning again. And so I don't want us to focus where many persons focus on the one person who got the one talent and did nothing. I prefer for us to focus today on the reality that we all have talents. The church is always in need of persons who, with humility, serve God and minister within the church and the community. Within our districts, everyone that I have been a part of, we have had what is called job function workshops, where we endeavor to help persons fulfill their positions within the church. There always seems to be a shortage of people with needed talents to serve in needed areas within the church. In the last several years, I've taken on that radical opinion that if we don't have individuals in the church with talents willing to serve in certain areas, then we need to reassess what we're trying to achieve as a church. And maybe that's an area where God is not pushing us, but rather it's to listen. To listen to how God is speaking to you and the direction where indeed we might need to go as a church. If each one of us has a talent, all of our talents are not the same. They are some in this church who paint beautiful pictures. There are some here who sing or play music wonderfully. I've already alluded, there are some who cook and others who achieve mechanical tasks. And sometimes when you come here, you find them in areas where you say, "And what are you doing there?" Some go out during the week and are building ramps. Others are growing things in a community garden. The list of talents seemingly are endless. Some come in here and fill pews with pencils and envelopes. Others write notes of encouragement. All the cards and letters and calls that I received during my recent illness meant so much to me. And I am still getting notes from friends and parishioners in other towns that just discovered I had an illness. In the disaster response area, one talent that I have learned that is needed is for people not necessarily to go and build and do what they call mucking out, which is washing out mud from floods and all different other types of things. But sometimes it's for people to go and to sit down with individuals who have experienced tragedy and to talk to them, to listen to their pain. In one church that I served, there was a need for firemen during the daytime, and I found myself becoming a volunteer fireman. One thing that I realized being a volunteer fireman, that there was someone there who needed not necessarily to go in the house and fight the fire or the structure, but sometimes it was to find where the family was, to find out where the little boy or girl was, and ask the mom or the dad, "Now, where is your pocketbook? Where are those things in the family that are precious? Where is your favorite toy? Is there a pet in the house that we need to be aware of?" And you always see the smile and the excitement when out would come the pocketbook and out would come the little doll or whatever. Because in talking with me, they had told me where it was and I could go and tell the captain. And enabled others to fight the fire. We have some here in the church and in the community that helps individuals fill out tax returns. Some within our church have received all types of training in business, and they bring talents to the church. If I ask those of you who have been a part of the church family for any length of time, who is the best hugger in the church? Where does she stand on Sunday mornings? Who would you say? And Joy, yeah. Fred and Joy. Whenever we think of someone visiting those persons in need, not only within our church, within the community. I was in the hospital the other day and a gentleman had come walking down the hall and he visited certain rooms and they said, "Do we have anybody in the church that does that?" And I said, "Yep, his name is Fred." I have shared this with you before, but it always comes back to my mind at times like this. Several years ago, I was allowed to attend an NA, a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. If 11 persons were at the meeting, there were 10 hugs coming in and 10 hugs going out, which equaled to 20 hugs. It's a part of their journey. It's a part of their journey toward wholeness. We all, no matter who we are, as we have alluded to this morning, no matter what our age, we all have talents. And we're all equal in the eyes of God. And we're all guaranteed equal rights under our Constitution. In an election year, we each have an equal vote. But when it comes to our abilities, we're different. We're as different as we possibly could be. God did not make us all the same. Maybe there are some persons here who have 5 talents. Maybe there are some of you who can only handle 1 talent. I went to a funeral of a friend of mine the other day, and his friends stood up and spoke about his life. And they said this about Bert. They said Bert was one person who could handle 4 or 5 things equally well. And in the process of sharing with him, you would experience him working 3 or 4 different things all at the same time. He was an amazing, maybe one of a kind creation of God. There are those of us who have great intellectual capabilities. Some of us are not as smart as others. There are some who have the ability to project and articulate their thoughts. Some cannot. There are some who are physical specimens. Some who are very attractive. Others of us are weaker and not so attractive. The important thing to remember is that each servant was given something. There's this lovely story told of a 38-year-old scrub woman who would go to the movies and sigh, "Oh, if I only had her looks." She would listen to a singer and moan and say, "If I only had her voice." Then one day someone gave her a copy of a book called The Magic of Believing. She stopped comparing herself with actresses and singers. She stopped crying about what she didn't have and started concentrating on what she did have. She took inventory of herself and remembered that in high school, she had a reputation for being the funniest girl around. She began to turn her liabilities into assets. And when she was at the top of her career, Phyllis Diller made over $1 million a year. And in the 1960s, that was a lot of money. If any of you remember Phyllis Diller, she wasn't good looking. And she did have a scratchy voice. But she could make people laugh, even at her bad looks. Sir Michael Coster, the celebrated conductor of the 19th century, was holding a rehearsal as a mighty chorus rang out, accompanied by scores of instruments. The piccolo player, a little pint-sized flute, was thinking perhaps that his contribution would not be missed amid so much music. And so he stopped playing. Suddenly the great leader stopped and cried out, "Where's the piccolo?" The sound of the one small instrument was necessary in the harmony, and the master conductor missed it when it dropped out. The point: to the conductor, there was no insignificant instrument in the orchestra. Sometimes the smallest, seemingly least important one can make the greatest contribution. And even if it doesn't seem to make that big a difference to the audience at large, the conductor knows it right away. And so when the church, the players and the instruments are diverse in different sizes, different shapes, different notes, different roles to play, but like the piccolo player, we often, our own sovereignty, decide that our contribution is not significant. Our contribution couldn't possibly make a difference. And so we quit. We stop playing. We stop praying. We stop giving. We stop doing. We drop out. But the conductor, Jesus Christ, notices. From our perspective, our contributions may be small, but it is crucial. Use the gift. Use the gifts. Use that which God has given to you. I don't know when I spend hours on a sermon that it will make a difference in anyone's life, but it's what God has called me to do. There was a time a few years ago when I thought maybe I would never make it back into the pulpit again. I attended church and the tears began to flow. I do not know all that God will do, but I know that we try and we try again. I don't know that if a teacher in a Sunday school class make in an effort to reach out to troubled students that it is going to make any difference in the long run. But I do know that it is better to try than not to try. When a person teaches a Sunday school class or goes to the trouble of singing in the choir or having to show up for rehearsal, there is no guarantee that their efforts will make God more real to individuals than not. But I do know that it's better to try than not to try. Do what you can where you are with what you have. Amen.